tongue jutted out of each palm, black and long and twisting. Suicide lowered its hands, the newly formed mouths slurping inches from Megan's head. I couldn't help but let go of her, but I didn't stop pleading. "Don't let anyone, anything, talk you into giving up." "I won't," I heard her say. "Promise me." The creeper slammed its grimy, licking hands over Megan's ears, fingers interlocked on top of her head. Instant quiet for me, but who knows what was echoing in Megan's mind now. The hands were sucking, tongues plunged into her ear canals, even though they were way too big. Dark drool spilled down either side of her neck like tainted syrup. "Can you hear me?" "Yeah." She smirked like I was a moron. "You were about to make me a promise." "Huh?" A blank stare, all emotion stripped away. "That you won't give up no matter what." She shrugged. Total disconnect. "Are you going to Stella Murphy's party?" "What? No, I..." "Megan, there's something blocking..." "You have this..." She pulled out her cell and started scrolling, tapping the screen fast. "Megan, you have to be strong. Fight for your life." She held her phone up to my face. "Look." A blurry picture of Lance walking into a jewelry store. "Do you know if he's been looking at engagement rings?" I moved the phone away and focused on her face. "I know he cares about you." There had to be a way to get through to her. "I need to go, okay?" It wasn't okay. I asked her not to, but she went inside anyway. Suicide's hand still squeezed her head, spewing some kind of white noise that drowned out my voice. Probably any voice of hope. I drove home, my gut churning. In my room, I sank into bed and worried myself sick. Would the press be at my school in the morning? I'd try to stop number 15, but had I? Chapter 25. I caught up with Rayanne before first period. No camera crews outside. Major relief. "Thanks for the dress." She looked up at me, no smile. "Very thoughtful, but I'm not sure that we should go to prom together." "Yesterday was a stupid misunderstanding." I stepped close. She arched a brow. I explained the situation, how what looked like a big hug was really me trying to shield Jess from an attack, even though I couldn't. "We're not a couple, Owen, I know that. This isn't about me being jealous." "Oh, well, that was too bad. I mean, I wouldn't want to see her wrapped around some guy." "It's that you broke your promise. You didn't outright lie to me, but you kept something from me. The fact that you're seeing Jess again." "But I'm not seeing her, I swear. And I wasn't trying to keep anything from you." Not that, anyway. My promise to Rayanne had actually died with Walt and Marshall. "If you're going to prom, Rayanne, I want to be your date." "Oh, I'm going." She gave a playful huff. "My mom is determined." She stopped her overloaded backpack from sliding off her shoulder. "Let me think about it, okay?" What choice did I have? "Call you later. Hope you have a good day." She turned to go, but I stopped her. "Can I ask you something? Why do you let Jess intimidate you so much? You're an incredible, brave person. A lot more secure than she is, really." She stared down at her turquoise Converse, shrugged. Then, finally, "Maybe 'cause girls like her never listen to girls like me." All I could do was nod. Jess didn't exactly listen to me, either. She turned again, and I watched her walk the entire way down the hall, lighting our school. When I got home, Frank's blue extended cab truck was taking up nearly my entire driveway. Great. As expected, there they were. On the sofa, giggling like middle schoolers, my mom sitting on his lap. Disgusting. She didn't seem to notice I was home 3 hours early. "Hey, Owen," as if we had a thriving mother-son relationship. "Do me a favor, sweetie. Run to Walmart and pick up the cake I ordered. It's Frank's birthday." Yeah, that's what I wanted to do. Celebrate her shackled boyfriend's birth. I looked over at him. Snakeskin boots, skin-tight jeans, a button-down shirt that needed to be buttoned higher. I mean, who needed to see his chest hair? One tacky cowboy. "And grab some candles." She and Frank started laughing again. Whatever. At least an errand would get me out of the house. I blared my music and drove fast. How long would it take for Rayanne to call me? I also worried about Jess. I held out hope that she'd dump Dan, for good this time. Then there was Megan. My mind was on overload. I stopped at a light and glanced to my left. There were two shackled homeless people under the overpass, but that's not what got under my skin. It was the horde of creepers, about 8 of them, swarming the hobos. The man and woman covered their heads while the invisible bullies jabbed and slapped them, striking high and low with swift blows. The man reared back and threw a weary punch in the direction of one of his attackers, but his fist passed right through its dingy garments. The woman shouted nonsense. At least, I assumed it was nonsense. A honk. I hadn't noticed the light change. I drove forward, still looking to the side. Deranged and strung out or not, these people were under attack, and they knew it. They could see the creepers, or, at the very least, feel their presence. It made sense, I guess. Homeless people walking around, swatting and mumbling into thin air. Maybe the creepers had actually driven them out of their functional lives into panhandling and street-corner babbling. I'll probably end up under a bridge with them someday, suffering and swinging away. I wasn't surprised Walmart was crowded, but I didn't expect that many creepers. Who knew? On my way to the bakery, I strolled through the book section, just in case there was something that might shed some light on my nightmarish life. I spied a hardcover book about demonology that, according to the back cover, was written by some well-known theologian. I thumbed through it, stopping in the glossary. Demon. A wicked spirit sent from the devil. Sometimes demons lived in people, but Christ could force them to come out. I'd never seen a creeper press completely inside a person's body. Man, I hoped that wasn't possible. Attached was bad enough. I scanned down, landing on Devil, Satan, formerly Lucifer. A spirit being, ruler of demons, the enemy of God and human beings. Ruler of demons. A month ago I would have laughed. I dropped the book in my cart, then headed to the bakery. The cake turned out to be ginormous, enough for 25 people. Go figure. I kept my head down and covered my nose as best I could on the way to grab some candles. I turned down an aisle and a lady slammed her shopping cart into mine, distracted by a menacing mob. A baby slobbering in the child seat and 2 more little people bouncing around her.
"I'm sorry," she said.
"It's fine." Her tiny daughter in a polka dot dress started crying, stomping her 4-inch foot.
"I want a toy."
"I told you no," the mom said while we both worked to realign our carts. Then her son took off running. She called his name, then followed after him. Little Miss Polka Dot stared up at me, still sniffling. "You better do what your mother says," I told her.
"I don't have to."
I bent down and spoke into her pouty mini face. "Oh, yes, you do. 'Cause if you don't, An evil monster will charge at you and rip the light right out of your little chest and crush it into a million disgusting pieces, then plaster it around your peewee neck, where it will stay forever. She dropped her head back and wailed like a police siren. Hey, I never claimed to be great with kids, and at least I told her the truth. Her mom returned, and I grabbed a pack of candles and pushed my cart like nothing had happened. I got into the shortest checkout line I could find and scanned the gum selection, still waiting on Rayanne's call. It was almost my turn to check out when a heavy-set lady stepped in front of me, grabbing the hand of the large man who must have been holding her place in line. Lucky me, she was linked to a creeper. Never fails. The cashier called for a manager, bringing our line to a standstill. I stood there, gagging, looking for a shorter line. There wasn't one. Man, it stinks. I thought I'd spoken under my breath. Excuse me? The woman in front of me spun around like a tornado and faced off with me. Did you just say that I stank? Oh, boy. No, I was talking about... Like an idiot, I pointed to the creeper. But to everyone else, it looked like I pointed at her boyfriend. Oh, no, you didn't. Her lower jaw jutted out. For the first time in my life, I thought a woman was going to kick my butt. She turned to her man, whose swollen bicep boasted a tattoo of a fractured skull. Did you hear what that fool just said about you? He nodded, looking me over from head to toe, straightening the gold nugget ring on his middle finger. The cashier stared at me, too, along with the other people in line. That's not what I meant. I shook my head. You guys don't stink at all. Yes, they do. The little boy behind me seemed to think that was funny. Tattoo Man pointed his finger a centimeter from my nose. You better shut your son up. Really? He's not my son. Hey! The boy's mother was offended. Who are you telling to shut up? Okay, this needs to stop. I raised my voice. This is crazy. That's when the turban-clad cashier intervened, his accent so thick I had to focus to understand him. Sir, please refrain from calling our customers crazy. No one is crazy here. I didn't. Yes, you did. The little instigator was at it again. Son, his mother said, leave the young man alone. But he's a meanie. Hey, I'm not mean. Never mind that I had a demonology book in my cart. Yes, you kind of are, sir, the cashier said. Okay, you know what? I threw cash on the counter. I'm out of here. I pushed my squeaky shopping cart out the door. Errands were no longer the mindless break from life that they used to be. That night, my phone finally rang. But it wasn't Rayanne. Can you come see me? I need to talk. I'm not your therapist, Jess, and you never take my advice anyway. Please, I don't want to be alone right now. I wasn't any good at rescuing people. I already knew that. Where are you? Franklin Park, where I'd played ball with Walt and Marshall on that afternoon. Please, Owen. By now, I should have known better. Chapter 26. I pulled into the parking spot next to Jess's convertible, but she wasn't in her car. The only lit area was the basketball courts, and she wasn't there either. She called to me, and I followed her voice, moving in the faint moonlight past a merry-go-round and slides until I came to a swing set. It stank. Thanks for coming. Jess rocked herself back and forth in a swing, sniffling. You okay? No answer. My eyes adjusted better to the dark, well enough to see a hulking black silhouette behind her. I shined my cell. Jess's makeup was smeared again. The creeper was familiar, too. Regret. So it had gotten its disgusting hands on her after all. Get that light out of my face. Never mind that light was the one thing she needed. I'm sorry, but I didn't know who else to call. Are you and Dan still together? I guess. I don't know how committed he is. Why don't you end it? Because I'm scared I'll have more... regret? I wasn't surprised when the creeper bent down and snarled at me. Then it stayed hunched over, mouthing something in Jess's ear, a garbled whisper. She slumped, no longer rocking. I mess everything up. No, you don't, Jess. Regret whispered in her ear again. My life is one big mistake. That's not true. It is true, Owen, the ugly, miserable truth. I couldn't hug her. Not while she was tethered to a creeper. So I fought for her from an arm's length away. Jess, it's like you talked about in the woods, those feelings that follow you. I know what you mean now. They're real, and they're attacking you, tricking you into thinking you're worthless, and... that was all the time I had. Regret was reaching down, hands moving toward Jess's ears. I shut up and stepped back, hoping to spare her the added brainwashing. The creeper froze. Finally, it put its arms down. She took a deep breath, a long exhale. Ashlyn, she's the one to worry about. I knew Ashlyn was in danger. I saw my first ever creeper swoop in on the girl. But I wasn't sure what Jess's angle was. What's going on with her? She's popping antidepressants, way too many, and hurting herself. Hurting herself how? Jess sighed but said nothing. Protecting her friend's privacy, I guess. I thought about the creeper that had closed in on Ashlyn. The slices all over its face and skin. Is she cutting? Jess looked up fast. How do you know? I saw it. She dropped her chin again, blinking hard. She tries to hide it, but yeah, I've seen her scabs, too. She's been talking to a counselor, but she's still struggling. I don't know what to do. I want to help her. I understand. I really did. It's not fair to put this on you. She turned her weepy eyes on me. You can't fix this. You have no idea how much I wish I could. We sat there a while. Then she stood and pulled out her keys, leaned forward, and kissed me on the cheek. We went our separate ways. Another failed mission. I stayed up all night researching demons. I flipped through my new book, then pulled up online interviews, articles, and video documentaries, trying to learn about everything from accounts of subtle demonic activity to full-blown possessions. Even with as much wickedness as I'd already seen, this stuff was scary on a different level. People completely overtaken by evil, their bodies ransacked like flimsy tents, growling in inhuman voices, foaming at the mouth, contorting in back-breaking fits. I'd have dismissed it as theatrics if it weren't for the eyes. After coming face to face with creepers, I recognized that people in demonic spells have the same dark, dead eyes, something some people without visionary powers claimed they could see. An unmistakable depravity. Venomous aggression. You can't fake that. What also blew my mind was the possibility that the same invisible beings preying on humans today had been doing this for thousands of years, maybe since the beginning of time. Our lives on Earth come and go, but from what I was seeing, creepers never stopped hunting people, one generation to the next. Did they have an end goal beyond wrecking us? I stewed over that one. Some people at school made a big deal out of it being Friday the 13th, but trust me, that date is a cultural superstition with zero significance among dark forces. Creepers did the usual, littered the place with their confusing notes, and used people's faults against them. Sometimes creepers examined every squirmy cord lagging from a person's head, then let go and moved on to inspect someone else. Made me glad I had none. Good news for me, people pretty much steered clear of me, Lance and Megan included. Neither demise nor suicide was attached to her today. That felt like a victory. It was a good thing I decided to stop off at the upstairs water fountain after school. Otherwise, I would have missed him. An enormous watchman stood in front of the big window at the end of the hallway. His waist was higher than most students' heads. He had glistening, caramel-brown skin and wore a thick, titanium-looking breastplate that probably weighed more than my mom's SUV. His eyes focused upward, as if gazing into an alternate cosmos. He was so bright my eyes watered. I stepped toward him, the hallway steadily clearing as students poured into the parking lot. By the time I reached him, I felt like I'd been pumped full of morphine, all warm and happy. His shin guards were nearly as tall as my legs. He and I were alone in the hallway now. This was my chance. "Sir?" I'd never felt so inferior in my life, but I had to try. "I need your help." "Nothing." "Can you hear me?" I waited. "Please, my school is in trouble, people I care about. I know you can stop the attacks, I've seen it." A slight nod of his flawless head, but not at me, at whatever stratosphere he was caught up in. I lowered to one knee, my hands clasped and raised. "If you help me, I'll do anything you ask." He didn't budge. Desperation took over. I got lower, stretched out on my stomach at his feet. "I'll serve you." Imagine an atomic bomb, an explosion so loud and hot and bright that your teeth rattle and you can't see or hear or feel your limbs. I don't know exactly what he did to me, only that when I came to, he was gone and I was on my back, a good 10 yards from where I'd been lying. I didn't hurt, but the exhilarating high was gone. It took me a while to stand, and a few more minutes to steady myself and walk out of the building. On my way home, I gave up on waiting for Rayanne to contact me, and called her instead. I learned something about Watchmen today. You did? They really, really don't like it when humans bow to them. Saturday morning, I convinced my mom to let me borrow her car and talked Rayanne into letting me take her out for breakfast. "So," I said on the way to the Broken Egg, "have you made a decision about prom?" It was a week away. "Yes." She cleared her throat. "I think we should still go together." I tried to keep it cool and not smile too big. Not because I was getting to go to prom, but because I'd be with her when she wore that red dress. "I need you to do something, though." She turned down the music. "Okay?" "Look me in the face and tell me you'll never keep anything from me. Like, purposely hide something." "Ugh." I stopped at a light and let go of the steering wheel to face her. "I don't want to keep anything from you, Rayanne." My way of being honest, without being honest. She didn't nod or acknowledge my statement at all. Maybe she was on to me, women's intuition or something, but she left it at that. Breakfast was good, and everything was going fine, better than fine, until we left. "You have any errands you need to run today?" I wasn't ready for our time together to be up. "I can drive you." "How about we head toward our school?" That threw me. "To the woods, where that clearing is." "What for?" I want to see the water well. My heart went from beating to banging. The thought of her ever drinking from it. You said the bucket miraculously fills, right? I opened my mouth, but nothing came out at first. I don't think that's a good idea.
Why not?
Slow exhale. The fewer people who know where to find it, the better.
I won't tell.
On the off chance that she would drop it, I didn't say anything. A minute later,
You don't trust me?
Her eyes weren't straying from my face. I had to put an end to this. I pulled over and shoved the car into park. I need you to trust me on this, Rayanne. You can't go near there. No one can, ever.
But I only want to...
Please, don't ask me again, okay? It's serious. Most people would have copped an attitude at that point. Rayanne just got quiet. I pulled back onto the road. I didn't like being the cause of Rayanne's heavy-eyed look of disappointment, but I'd rather see that than risk seeing her in a casket with her eyes glued shut. Chapter 27 When I woke on Sunday morning, I found a bright yellow package on my nightstand, a milk chocolate bunny inside. My mom gave me one every Easter. I got dressed and headed to church. Yes, church. I parked my motorcycle in a shady spot under an oak tree across the street from the big sanctuary where Marshall's funeral had been held. The church that was supposed to have someone call me but never did. I watched the people, mostly coming, some going, all dressed in their Sunday best. I wished I could capture people's shackles on camera, so I could show Rayanne how wrong she was. Not to rub her face in it, but to get her to stop pushing her faith on me. I didn't resent that she believed, I just wanted her to accept that I didn't. And this stakeout helped prove my case. Yes, there were glowing people at the church, admittedly a higher number than usual. But there were lots of shackled people, too. Carrying Bibles, shaking hands with the smiling ladies at the doors. Making an effort to sit through church, just like the lights. I'd started referring to shackle-free people as lights, by the way. Just made things easier. I also noticed that within families, some members were shackled and others weren't. There were shackled husbands whose wives were lights and the other way around. Also shackled young people whose parents weren't, and occasionally shackled parents whose kids were lights. Clearly, being a light was not inherited. I sat there spying, thinking about how, to everyone else, there was no difference from one person to the next. But through my eyes, it was night and day. Freedom and slavery. Then there was me. No shackle, no light. An exception to a rule I still couldn't figure out. The church marquee read, "Prayer changes everything." But how? Speak a request into the universe and the universe processes it and actually rearranges itself for you? Hey, I'd try just about anything if it meant gaining an advantage over evil. So there, alone in the shade, I gave the prayer thing a whirl. Even bowed my head. Whatever or whoever is listening right now, if anyone is listening, I ask that you keep the creepers off my mom, Jess, Megan, Ashlyn, the people I care about. I felt like a moron, like I was bearing my soul to my handlebars. And please stop the suicides. The end. The next day, the vibe at my school was different. Like a heightened intensity was stirring among the creepers. There were more of them around, if you can imagine that, and they were all spastic and restless, and linking up to twice as many people as usual. I saw Jess in the hallway, still bound to regret. So much for prayer changing things. My mom came home around 6 o'clock in a great mood and asked me to go to dinner. I wasn't expecting that. We sat at a booth at a Mexican place and couldn't stop laughing about a guy who was singing in the mariachi band. He kept shaking his hips. Guess you had to be there. Anyway, I was trying to enjoy myself, but battling the urge to warn my mom yet again. Such a helpless feeling, knowing someone important to you is being terrorized by evil on a regular basis, and is completely clueless about it. After finishing our meal by plowing through a batch of sopaipillas, she pushed her plate to the side and leaned on the table. No more laughter. "Are you doing okay, Owen? I need you to be honest with me." I put my fork down. "Sure." She gave a dejected nod, the same kind I gave her when I knew she was lying. "You've made some outlandish statements lately, and you seem on edge. And I've noticed Lance and the guys aren't coming around. What's going on?" "I know Walt and Marshall's deaths were difficult for you, but what else is it?" I wanted to tell her everything, to collapse into her arms like boys do with their mothers when they're little. But I couldn't. Telling the truth would only make things worse. "Is this about your father?" Her tone was high and soft. I stared at her. Was she kidding? This was the only time in my entire life that she'd ever brought him up. I wasn't about to miss this opportunity. "I want to know about him, Mom. Anything." She looked away and tipped her wine glass at our server. "There's not much to tell you. I thought Robert was a good man, that he loved me and we'd be together for life, but..." That's all it took for her eyes to well up. I waited for the server to refill her glass. "I don't understand, Mom. Why would he leave just 'cause you got pregnant?" She chewed the inside of her cheek. "Owen, do you know what I want from you? For you?" I shook my head. "I want you to get back what was taken from your childhood. A happy family, a marriage that lasts, children who look up to you, grow up under the same roof as you." She dabbed a napkin under her eyes. I sipped my tea, then took a turn. "You know what I want from you, Mom?" She put her glass down after having lifted it halfway to her mouth. "Quit giving in to negative thoughts that pile up until you cave." I purposely avoided looking at her glass. "And quit drinking. It's a worthless addiction." Her chin sank into her chest, and she got way too emotional for a public setting. "Don't you think I've tried?" That's when I decided I'd go for it after all. "You'll never get better until you realize that your struggles aren't just with yourself. You're being oppressed, intentionally made to fall down and fail." "You think Frank is holding me back?" "No, Mom." I moved my plate out of the way and leaned forward. "This has nothing to do with Frank. It's something else, even worse."
"What?"
"I told you before, I call them creepers." She squirmed in her seat. "I think they might be demons." That's when I lost her. "Don't you dare bring that stuff up with me." She asked the waiter for a to-go cup, her way of letting me know the conversation was over. I drove us home, hoping we wouldn't get busted for having open alcohol in the car. By the time we turned onto our street, she'd put the whole experience behind her and was quizzing me to see if I knew the meaning of the Latin root word, acidus. "Duh, it's where we get the English word acid." When we pulled up to the house, Rayanne's mom was knocking on our door. My mom stuffed her styrofoam cup into my hand, then approached her. "Hey, Susan." Mrs. Griner smiled, then after some small talk she said, I'm hosting a prayer meeting at my house at 10 o'clock tomorrow morning. Some moms are getting together to pray for the Masonville High students and our community. I realize your workload may conflict, but I want you to know you're invited.
Really?
Hadn't Rayanne told her mom not to bother inviting my mother? My mom pulled off a polite smile.
Thanks for the invitation. I'll be there if I can.
Yeah, right. More small talk. Then Mrs. Griner left, and my mom and I went inside our graffiti-stained house. I flipped on the TV, but kept the volume down so she could hear me now that she'd gone into the kitchen.
Mom, I know you'd never go to that in the morning, but just in case you feel obligated, let me assure you it's a total waste of your time. I know for a fact that prayer doesn't work.
My mouth hadn't closed yet when my dog started barking like I'd unleashed a herd of cats into our living room. Then I understood. Anne jumped up. A creeper charged at me through the wall, stopping so close to my face that I had to lean back to read its infected scar. Faithless. The putrid thing began to circle me. I froze, hands up, determined not to freak out. What was it trying to do? Even though I didn't have cords or chains, around and around it went, eyeing me like a wolf sniffing a slab of meat, frothing at its filthy mouth. I didn't move, until it let out an ear-shattering growl. I couldn't help it. Instinct kicked in, and I sprinted out the door to my motorcycle. I don't think I touched the brake one time on the way to Rayanne's. I ran to her porch and pressed the doorbell twice, straining to catch my breath. But I gasped again when I saw Faithless charging up the driveway, coming for me. I called Rayanne's name and pounded the door with both fists. It opened and I practically jumped into her arms. Faithless got to the doorway, then stopped suddenly like it had slammed into a concrete wall. It wouldn't, or couldn't, trespass into Rayanne's light. She shut the door and I clung to her the whole time that I explained things. Had her parents overheard me, I think they probably would have called 911. Or the guys in white coats.
What were you doing when the creeper showed up?
Rayanne acted like she was an investigator tasked with solving a crime.
I was talking to my mom.
What did you say right before it appeared?
I had to think about it.
I told her I know for a fact that prayer doesn't work. She gave me that stare I was getting to know too well.
Way to go, Owen.
What?
Don't you get it?
She dropped her hands onto her appealing hips. It took me a second.
You think I summoned the thing?
Your comment led it right to you.
It was possible, I guessed.
But the next day, the impossible happened. Chapter 28. I knew it was only a matter of time before Faithless came back, maybe even teamed up with Murder, which didn't help my insomnia one bit. And for the record, I determined to be way more careful about what I let come out of my mouth. I realized that if being faithless was evil, it had to mean faith was good. But I couldn't help that I didn't have anything to put my faith in. The Watchman hadn't exactly proven dependable, and God even less so. When I got to school on Tuesday morning, I learned there'd been another suicide. A freshman kid who was in the marching band. Thankfully, I hadn't known him, but I still took the news hard. Another casualty of an invisible war. I felt like I'd failed him somehow. As an eerie twist, number 15 was ranked 15th in his class. There was talk about yet another suicide, but it turned out to be a false alarm. A girl was really sick, but rumor somehow had it that she'd hung herself. How the facts can become that twisted is beyond me, but then again, we're talking about high school. I saw Megan in the hallway, and Lance was a distance away with his back to her, talking to someone. I seized the moment. "Hey, Megan, how have you been?" She was creeper-free, and on top of that, had a cheerful grin on her face. I hadn't expected that. "You look better," I told her. She grinned bigger. "Thanks for coming by the other day and talking to me. I just wanted to help." She put her hand on my shoulder. "You did, Owen." I couldn't remember the last time I'd felt that relieved. Had I actually managed to ward off suicide? Sure enough, demise came creeping along the ceiling above our heads, alerted to our conversation through that maddening eavesdropping ability creepers had. And as if one wasn't bad enough, there were now two creepers spying down on us, both named Demise. Still, Megan seemed much happier today, her old self. I stepped closer to her. "You know, if you ever need anything..." "What's this?" I hadn't noticed Lance approaching. "I thought I told you to stay away from us." "I was just saying hi." I cleared my throat, and reminding her that she's an awesome person with an amazing future, lots to look forward to in life. Lance looked me over like I had a skin disease, then grinned at Megan. "I know who's got my vote for most likely to succeed at being weird." I don't know if Megan stood up for me or not. I walked away at that point. Rayanne was ecstatic when I told her about Megan's improvement. After that, the day carried on like a sad song. Creepers wrote on everything like psychopaths. There wasn't a wall, a row of lockers, or a window left untainted by their vicious black words. I was on my way to fourth period when a refreshing scent blasted through the hallway. I looked, but didn't see anything. I ran up two flights of stairs, stopping halfway to type out a text to Rayanne. "Watchmen are here." I was sure of it. I stepped onto the second floor by the library, and a blinding light hit the left side of my face. I shielded my eyes, infused with a sense of calm, but also giddy with adrenaline the instant I saw them. Five breathtaking armor-clad watchmen in a V formation at the end of the hallway. This time they peered out, not up, staring intently at the oblivious students. I took refuge beside a section of lockers and sneaked peeks at the celestial giants, anticipating that at any second they would charge. Not that I was scared of them, I just didn't want to get in their way. Neither did the creepers, apparently. There wasn't a single fiend in sight. Minutes later, the bell rang, and the last few students rushed to class. I came out of hiding one slow step at a time, until I stood facing them across the hall, their radiance so powerful, I was actually tempted to bow down again, even if it meant triggering a colossal blast. Suddenly it happened. In perfect sync, they strode, covering a massive amount of ground with each step. And they opened their mouths, creating what felt to me like a massive wind tunnel as they blew on the lockers, walls, floors, everything in their path. The rotten graffiti shriveled to dust and disintegrated, disappearing into the whirlwind. As if that wasn't astonishing enough, the watchmen plunged their humongous hands into the walls, pulling hissing creepers out of hiding by their necks, arms, whatever. I hightailed it back to my post beside the lockers as they passed by me, all of them clutching at least three creepers in each fist, dragging them along. The creepers thrashed like they feared for their immortal lives, whined like they were begging for mercy. The watchman made a sharp turn and stormed down the steps, clearing nearly an entire flight of stairs in one stride. My knees were weak, but I managed to follow, watching as they traveled the length of the main downstairs hallway, blasting graffiti into oblivion and snatching more creepers out of hiding. They stopped at the end of the hall and hurled the life-sucking vipers through a locked set of double doors out of our school. One of the watchmen turned and faced a stairwell down the hall from me. Just stood there, staring down at... what? I took careful steps that way, then spotted her. Ashlyn, slouched over on the bottom step, an anguished expression on her face, as she tore through her purse, searching for something. There was a creeper behind her, crouched low as if it could actually hide from the watchman.
"Do it,"
I heard the creeper hiss at her, in perfect English. Ashlyn pulled a pill bottle out of her purse and eyed it.
"Do it."
The creeper was more forceful this time. Ashlyn popped the lid off the bottle. I approached her at the same time that the watchman closed in on the creeper, pinning it against the stairs by its crooked neck. Ashlyn looked up at me, and I extended my open hand toward the pill bottle. Her gaze went right back to the pills, longing in her eyes. "Those are hurting you," I said, not helping. The watchman took a big step back, ripping the creeper off of Ashlyn's chain as if the links were made of tissue paper. The thing flailed its arms and legs like a dying cockroach as the watchman chucked him out of the school. Ashlyn stood, peering into my face, thinking it was just the two of us in that hallway. I still held my hand out. She swallowed hard. "Throw these away for me?" Her eyes pooled. Finally, she set the bottle in my hand. "I will." I'd suspected it before, but now I was sure. My life's purpose was to help people. Not just the ones in physical pain, but the tons of people hurting on the inside, battling enemies of the soul. Yeah, I had a lot to figure out and learn in order to pull it off. But I was hopeful that if I didn't give up, I'd eventually find answers. I had to. Nothing else seemed to matter now. I was so jittery that it was hard to sit. But I managed to slide into my fourth period chair. Rayanne had replied to my text. "I'm not surprised watchmen are here. Look at the time. 10:17 a.m. So?" Then I remembered. Mrs. Griner's prayer group. Did that somehow commission the watchmen? I didn't know, but I didn't see any more of the warriors that day or that week. I can't tell you how discouraging it was to watch the creepers steadily reemerge, staining my school all over again, desecrating the place with their hatred and degrading words. I needed something to take my mind off things, and I found it. It was finally time to see Rayanne in that little red dress. Chapter 29. My mom said I looked like a million bucks in my tuxedo. I had to agree. For just a moment, I felt like a normal 18-year-old. Yeah, my mother's chains scraped the pavement as she hurried up Rayanne's driveway beside me, handing me the corsage box. But still, I was about to experience a time-honored American tradition. I would knock on the door and check out my prom date. Nothing paranormal about that. I have to say, the sight of Rayanne in that red sequined dress did not disappoint. I forced my eyes away several times, unable to shake the paranoia that her father could see right through me. Man, she looked amazing, and her perfume was working its magic on me. All the parents took a million pictures. My mom got teary-eyed, a little awkward, but so did Rayanne's parents. Mrs. Griner's tears spilled over. Finally, the camera flashes stopped, and my date and I could go be alone. My mom had agreed to let me rent a brand new Camaro for the night,
especially after I rubbed it in that it was her idea that I go to prom with Rayanne. I placed a long-stemmed red rose on the passenger seat. I opened the door for Rayanne, and she blushed.
Red's my favorite color.
She inhaled the scent of the petals. I studied the curves of her body in that fitted dress, and eyed her matching high heels.
Mine too.
I drove to the end of the street, then stared at her again.
You look stunning, Ray.
She gasped.
You just called me Ray.
Yeah? Her smile grew at the same time that her eyes became glossy.
That's what Lucas used to call me.
Oh, well, if you don't want...
I love it.
She rested her hand over mine and smiled bigger. Seemed to me she was having just as hard a time taking her eyes off me as I was her. We met up with some other couples for dinner, a few of Rayanne's friends, and that went fine. I'd learned how to enjoy a meal even with creeper funk wafting in my direction. By the time I paid our bill and we left, the sun was setting, making the sky a breathtaking collage of oranges and yellows and pinks. It's not like me to notice that sort of thing, but I've heard that the mundane becomes exquisite when you're falling in love. As we drove toward the Swank Hotel for prom, I really wanted to skip out on the high school scene and do something else entirely, just Rayanne and me. I figured she'd hate the idea, but I probed just in case. So you're really looking forward to this, right?
Yeah, I guess so.
You want to go, don't you?
She sighed. Well, honestly, I've never cared much about prom.
Looked like things just might go my way.
My friends have dreamed about it their whole lives, she said, but not me. This night actually means a lot more to my mom than me.
Just the open door I needed. So what if we ditch the plan, Rayanne? Do something else.
Like what?
We were both smiling now, energized by spontaneity.
I have an idea.
I said, I just need to stop off at a store for a second, okay?
Sure.
She got her cell out. But what are we doing? My parents will kill me if I don't tell them where I am.
Well, I was hoping to surprise you.
Rayanne eyed her cell but didn't press any buttons. She bit her bottom lip.
You'll still have me home by 1 a.m.?
Of course. After a minute, she sighed and put her cell away. I got the feeling this was the most rebellious thing she'd ever done in her entire life.
Okay, surprise me.
Now she was grinning just as big as I was. A lot of girls would have nagged and tried to wear me down so I'd give up the surprise, but not Rayanne. She wasn't the type that had to be in control all the time. One of many things I loved about her. I parked at a hole-in-the-wall grocery store.
You want to stay in the car?
We're slightly overdressed.
Who cares? I'm coming.
I managed to push our grocery cart, even though it had a wheel that wouldn't spin and kept pulling to the right. Someone snapped a picture of us.
Say cheese, the lady said.
Rayanne held up a block of mozzarella. She stopped off at the makeup aisle, and I grabbed a few things without her seeing. A package of strawberries, some Hershey's chocolate bars, cold drinks. I found a big rolled-up blanket and threw it in the basket. Rayanne met up with me as I was finishing checking out. She put a plastic sack over her shoulder and walked around like it was her purse. She cracked me up. I drove a while, traveled two towns over, and it was around 9 o'clock when we finally parked at our destination. I hadn't been there in years, but lucky me, it was still there. A colorful, vintage-looking carnival next to a big lake. Lights hung overhead, strung from one ride to the next. A handful of people enjoyed the nightlife and lake view.
A really cool atmosphere, if you ask me. Rayanne's face lit up like a child at Christmas.
This is beautiful. How do you know about this place?
When I was a kid, my mother used to make road trips to Texas to see a friend of hers. She'd bring me here. I have some good memories.
I helped Rayanne onto the mermaid-themed merry-go-round, and she sat with both feet on one side of a giant seahorse. I stood and held on to her waist, you know, in case she started to fall or something. Cool air blew off the water, fanning the wisps of hair framing Rayanne's face. I gave up on trying not to stare. I was more leery of getting on the rusty Ferris wheel than she was, but I sucked it up. I didn't want to ruin the moment by saying how freaky it was to look down from way up there and see creepers scattered among the people, so I kept it to myself. I also didn't mention that the toothless man operating the ride was linked to a creeper named Insanity. We survived the ride, and after a few more, made our way back to the car, talking the whole time. I drove us farther down the lakeside road until there were no more lights or people, then found a place to park and spread my new blanket near the water. It took Rayanne a few minutes to relax, but she finally slipped off her high heels and sat by me. This wasn't exactly a tropical paradise, but the lake looked spectacular at night, moonlight rippling across the surface. Rayanne cast a soft golden glow onto our blanket, and I let out a belly laugh. I hadn't realized the blanket had the Run and Go grocery store logo imprinted across the front, a smiling shopping cart with huge pink tennis shoes. We munched on strawberries and chocolate and laughed about all kinds of things, but after a while the conversation got deeper. She asked me questions about my childhood.
My mom has issues. She shrugged. Whose doesn't?
I crumpled an empty wrapper and then surprised myself by opening up way more than I ever had with anyone. My mom drinks all the time, every day, for as long as I can remember. Rayanne got really still.
I'm sorry. I had no idea.
Yeah. I exhaled, hoping to seem relaxed. She does the double life thing pretty well. Rayanne cleared her throat, looked up at the moon.
My parents do, too.
No way. Of all people. Their marriage has been falling apart ever since my brother died, but they refuse to get help. It's like they dread admitting we're not perfect. I'd somehow come to believe they were. I guess lights struggle too sometimes.
Of course, she said.
I think she meant to bring up something positive next. But, so why did you move to Texas? This one was under lock and key, way too personal. She obviously sensed my reluctance.
Is it hard to talk about?
I nodded, trying to think of a way to change the subject. But she was too fast.
Something with your mom?
I nodded again, my defenses steadily giving way to a growing sense of vulnerability that I fully intended to squash.
You can tell me.
Don't ask me how, but she had a way of begging with her eyes. I tried to avoid them, but in the silence, the situation grew more intense until I found myself giving in. For months, I'd refused to think about the night my mom and I left Boston, so it took a while for me to get going. I spoke slowly. It was Christmas Eve, and no surprise, my mom's boyfriend was wasted. The whole time Tim lived with us, I'd hardly ever seen him sober. I overheard him arguing upstairs with my mom, nothing new either. But then there was this loud thump, like something had slammed the wall. I ran upstairs. I had to pause my story, force my emotions into submission. I opened the door and Tim was... He was choking my mother. Her face was blue.